After 15 days of testimony by witnesses for the prosecution, attorneys for admitted Boston Marathon bomber Zahar Zinayev began to present their case yesterday afternoon. One day and 2 hours later, the defense is rested, having called just 4 witnesses to the stand. It's day 16, and this is Finish Line inside the Boston Marathon bombing trial. From the Moakley Federal Courthouse in Boston, I'm David Boeri for WBUR.
And I'm Kevin Cullen from the Boston Globe.
So, Kevin, the defense closes. We figured they weren't going to be up long in this, what we now know is a first phase of the trial, clearly. They did have a little bit of a run today.
They did. We didn't expect a big defense, a long defense, but that was even shorter than I thought.
Well, the defense has clearly lost and lost consistently to rulings by the judge here, where they wanted to answer what they considered the prosecution case that goes right beyond the proving of the crimes to the aggravating factors. But they haven't been able to do it. So what they did present today was interesting, and it reminded me that during opening arguments, Judy Clark held a photograph to the jury, and it was of a young Zahar Zinayev with his older brother and his arm around his shoulder. And she said, we want to get from what happened to take us from here. And then the second photo she showed them was of Tamerlan in the lead and Zahar behind him on Boylston Street. And boy, what we saw today in their run was fingerprints everywhere, literally and figuratively. This is Tamerlan's job.
Yeah, the defense set up what I think is actually what are going to be the mitigation phase of their narrative. In a nutshell, the defense is that it was Tamerlan's fingerprints that were on all these components of the bomb, and that it was Tamerlan's, you know, virtual or digital fingerprints that was on all that jihadi propaganda that ended up on Zahar's computers and his electronic devices. So basically, as they left it, Zahar, their client, is this kid who's chilling, logging on to Facebook and the Russian equivalent of Facebook. They wanted to show those two stark differences. Tamerlan's involved in everything that would lead up to the bombings, and that Zahar is just this ordinary teenager doing what ordinary teenagers do until they get sucked into this destructive vortex by an extremist brother.
And Tamerlan, the dead brother, his ghost is everywhere in this trial, to be sure. What we established today, Tamerlan's fingerprints are on the Tupperware container that's found at Watertown. With 3 pounds of powder in it. His fingerprints were found on the transmitter. His fingerprints were found on the pressure cooker. His fingerprints are found on the jar of nails in the Cambridge apartment. Fingerprints found on the cock gun. Fingerprints found on the rolls of tape. And every time the defense established it was Tamerlan, they asked the question, did you find any of Zahar's fingerprints on these items? No, no, no. And yesterday they established that at the time that Tamerlan is at the mall in Saugus, the suburb of Boston, presumably buying the pressure cooker, we know he bought the pressure cooker there, and in New Hampshire buying BBs, which are the component that go into the bomb, the cell phone indicates that Zahar is down in Dartmouth, New Bedford, which is far away. And so it says his cell phone is there, and he's probably in southeast Massachusetts at the time.
Yeah, that was very effective. The defense, they only put up 4 witnesses, and actually, you know, 2 of them worked for the FBI. One was Michelle Gamble, the photographer. The other one was Elena Graff, the fingerprint analyst from the FBI lab in Quantico. And yet they use them to their devices. It's interesting, David, when you think about it, one of the reasons this guilt phase went faster than any of us expected is that the defense was very limited in their cross-examinations. They did not cross-examine any victims. They did not cross-examine anyone hurt by any of this. And when they did go after the government witnesses, particularly FBI agents or people who work for the FBI, they went after them almost as prosecutors would. And they were focusing on and trying to get incriminating information against somebody. But it wasn't their client. It was their client's brother.
Oh, absolutely. And I think one of the things that they did with one of their witnesses, one of the FBI analysts, was something that's really important to them. They the defense wants to establish that there is no proof, and no proof has been offered, that Zahar Tsarnaev deliberately planted that bomb behind the Richard family.
Right.
People think that he deliberately did it. The government didn't offer proof, and so they took the analyst to task at the time, indicating that, in fact, in their chalks, they didn't identify other people and that the family had moved.
The other thing, I think one of the most effective things that Bill Weinreb, the prosecutor, said in his opening statement was that Zahar Tsarnaev stood there in back of the Richard family for 4 minutes. And the time stamps show that. He was there for 4 minutes. Now, whether he put the bomb directly in back of Martin Richard, whether it was 2 feet to the left, and after the first explosion, Martin Richard moved directly into the path of the bomb, I don't know how much relevance that is. If you're a jury, let's go back to just the imagery of that courtroom, David. Yesterday, when the medical examiner was talking about the autopsy and what that bomb did to Martin Richard, that jury was absolutely engaged, crying, some angry. And then today, as you and I sit here and talk about how good of a day the defense had and the limited witnesses they put up there, there wasn't the same kind of engagement.
What the defense certainly recognized, they told the jurors, we don't deny that this happened or that it's terrible. But, of course, they're looking at that second phase. They're looking at any way they can find to save Zahar's life. And so that's why they have wanted to position themselves as prosecutors of Tamerlan and to establish the case that he's following, that it's not so intentional. In part, what they're doing, at least up front now, is redeeming him by vilifying Tamerlan.
And clearly, the prosecution argument has been equal partners in this conspiracy. But if you're an equal partner, why, if you're a Zahar Tsarnaev, why aren't your fingerprints on these components? Why aren't your fingerprints on the very things that Tamerlan's fingerprints are on? So I think the defense has planted some seeds of doubt for a potential juror to look at this and say, were they equal partners? Did the prosecution present enough evidence in the course of 14 days, 92 witnesses? Did they present enough evidence for me to sit here and say they were equal partners? And as I sit here, I'm not so sure they did.
No, and the other thing they established by bringing their own computer forensics expert today is that it looks like it's Tamerlan's laptop that is bringing in Inspire. He is the one that's looking for that magazine connected to radical jihadist Anwar al-Awlaki, calling on people to wage jihad in the West and showing them how to make bombs, that it's coming off Tamerlan's computer and establishing that there were no search words that they could find on Zahar's computer for jihad, for making bombs, for ammunition stores in New Hampshire. And so that all those search terms were on Tamerlan's laptop, not on the computer belonging to
Zahar. It's interesting, when Al Chakravarty, the prosecutor, got up to rebut that, what he said is that you can't say who actually downloaded that. And the witness said, no, I can't. But that actually helps the defense. If there's absolutely no certainty who downloaded all this stuff, it actually goes to the defense argument that you can't say Zahar was a radicalized jihadi. It's all about doubt. That's all they're trying to create.
Yeah.
They don't have to prove anything. The prosecution does.
It's the why. As Judy Clark says, and we have not yet seen her really perform, and that she will do in the second phase of this trial, on the sentencing phase. But what she said at the beginning is how we disagree with the government is on why.
Absolutely.
The motive. We can't miss the opportunity to talk about what's missing here at the end of this trial that may not be critical to the verdict and the sentencing, but the fact that we have not seen and we have not been told and the government has not presented the evidence, where were the bombs made and who made them?
And how did they get all that powder? That's the thing I keep scratching my head over.
I keep on doing the math because the numbers are so crazy. They talked about firecrackers being the source of the powder. Well, one firecracker is 35 thousandths of a gram. It would take 12,900 firecrackers to get 1 pound. That means you'd need 130,000 firecrackers to get 10 pounds, and that's only one of two bombs. That's insane. It's absurd. Yeah. It's not coming from firecrackers. And they talked about the mortars, which have about 35 grams of powder in them. It would take 129 mortars to come up with 10 pounds of powder. We're talking about at least 16 twice. So you're talking about over 258 mortars. Now, the government, by its success, has established an expectation they'd be able to find the receipts for these, the sale of these,
right,
because of everything they've come up with all these relatively minor purchases. We have no accounting for that.
No, nothing on the powder. Those are, I think, the two areas that stick out the most. But I wonder, will this matter to the jury? And does the defense get up there and say, hey, they were never able to tell you where they built the bombs? I think the defense is actually happy with where they are at the end of this guilt phase, because it's just unclear where the bombs were built.
And so
that keeps their guy out of it.
The jury's task will shift next week. Their job when they start next week is to determine whether Zhihar Tsarnaev is guilty as charged. There's no question about how they'll come back. It's just when they'll come back.
It's interesting, David. You've always said this to me, that courtrooms and trials are not exactly where you go to find the truth all the time. And today when Judy Clark got up there and said the defense had rested, it struck me that that wasn't really true, because they've just started.
And so this is the end of day 16, the end of the week in the federal death penalty trial of Zhihar Tsarnaev. Join us again on Monday as we expect closing statements by both sides of this trial. From the Moakley Federal Courthouse in Boston, this is Finish Line, inside the Boston Marathon bombing trial. I'm David Boeri for WBUR.
And I'm Kevin Cullen from the Boston Globe.
Finish Line, inside the Boston Marathon bombing trial, is a co-production of WBUR and the Boston Globe. New episodes of the podcast will be released multiple times a week throughout the trial after court lets out for the day. You can listen at WBUR.org and at BostonGlobe.com, or you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, where new episodes will appear as soon as they're released. Go to the podcast section of iTunes and search Finish Line to subscribe. Thanks for listening.